The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel a gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast live from London. What's a live podcast? Well, it's just a podcast that's being recorded, but we're doing it live as opposed to in the past. This is a weird way to start things. I'm Ian Higgins. I'm joined by Sam Perry. We're sitting in Hyde Park at 8 o'clock in the morning. We've just spoken to Peter Siddle, the team hotel. He is on the show. You already know that because it's in the description. You're going to hear ambient sounds of swans in the background, tourists walking past, and it's just a couple of blokes talking about the Ashes. Cricket, just completely normal stuff. Pez, good morning to you and welcome.
Good morning, Higgins. Thank you for the welcome. As I gaze out over this beautiful lake in Hyde Park, we look completely normal.
Completely normal.
People here are running around this wonderful lake. As you said, Higgins, we can see the swans and the ducks existing peacefully together. The swans are pretty fucking aggressive when you think about it, as is my language. There's a... Would you say there's a buzz in the air ahead of Lords? He goes, I don't detect one around London or England that much, but once we got into kind of West London, into Kensington, we drove past Lords to the team hotel. Can't reveal the location.
don't ask for postcodes.
Yeah, don't ask for postcodes. You can feel a little something because it's actually a really beautiful morning here in London, though they are forecasting some rain.
Yeah. There's a certain je ne sais quoi.
We just ate at a French cafe. A boulangerie, if you will. I know you will.
We just said, let's not make this too self-referential.
True.
So live shows are available. No.
But I just smuggled.
Exactly,
sorry.
Exactly.
No, come on.
Exactly. Pez, it's quite remarkable as an Australian coming over here and realising how hard it is to find cricket like in media, on the television. It's obviously not a free-to-air. We obviously know that. But like... the football season's already started. It's you know, the World Cup, they won it, so they don't care about the Ashes anymore. Which makes me think even more that, like, Australia's going to fucking win the Ashes, man. It's going to happen. Like, because people don't really care about it here. They got the thing they wanted. They won the World Cup, you know, illegally. They won it illegally.
They won it because it was legal, and that was about
oh,
it.
Oh, that was the thing. Yeah. Okay, I misunderstood that. But, you know, here we are on the crest, on the very eve of the Lord's Test match. Australia would be feeling confident of going 2-0 up. That's incredible. Like, who saw this coming like a month ago? But here we are.
Yeah, nobody saw it coming. There's a lot of people kind of like off air, whispering, you know, backstage, wherever.
Yeah.
Starting to indicate that the England team may not be feeling, you know, as pumped for these Ashes as they ordinarily might because of the World Cup. There's now a counter-narrative coming out, he goes, that Australia might be getting ahead of itself a little bit. And that's true.
Definitely.
And that's what we do.
Yeah, I'm away.
That's actually in our constitution.
Yes. Do we have one?
Yeah, we've got a cupboard full of quicks. England's completely injured, including Jimmy Anderson.
Yeah.
Steve Smith will not be dismissed for the next 3 years as he compensates for his year out of the game.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at 4 or 5 nil. It's not really the case. A lot of it will depend on the Lord's pitch. That's pretty much what people are talking about at the moment. And most people came to the conclusion, he goes, that for England to get back into the series, they needed to exploit Australia's biggest weakness, which was the moving ball. And the best way you do that is with a green seamer, you know, to create archetypal English conditions like that which we saw when England played Ireland. You know, they were dismissed for 85, but then they in turn dismissed Ireland for 38.
Yes.
Normal stuff, which is the theme of this tour.
Yeah.
But news out of Lords is that it's looking like it might be a bit of a slow, flat one that suits the batters, which I find that remarkable, presuming that, you know, cricket boards or the ICC or anyone can doctor wickets. And I know we've been told by those in the know, ITK, that that's not actually how pitch creation works.
Mm.
But come on, if you were England, you'd have a raging green seamer, wouldn't you?
Yeah, how do England win the next 4 test matches? They win it by creating conditions which are so foreign to Australia that that they can outbat Australia through low scoring games. I think if they prefer a flat wicket or faster pitches, that's where Australia's going to thrive, and they can probably bring in your Hazelwoods and your Starks on the quicker pitches and probably even out bowl England. But I think England win win the Test series the way they have done for the last fucking five series here. Just be better with the Duke's ball.
And nick us off.
And nick us off for fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's just been so forgotten, even though we keep talking about it. It was 120-8. The Test match was over.
Yeah.
England were going to win. Yeah. And they were still going to win on day four when Travis Head was out and Australia had a 110-run lead. They were still going to win.
Yeah.
But Steve Smith is such, you know, in a... Even for Steve Smith, though, that game, that wasn't a normal Steve Smith game. He's had a fucking worldie, even for him. A remarkable game.
Yeah.
But, like, England's been so cucked, and I can't think of a better adjective than that, or any adjective for that matter, because I have a small vocabulary and, you know, an addiction to pornography. He said in Hyde Park.
It's getting late in the tour.
Yeah, exactly. That, like, England have won one tournament, they're like, well, that's good enough. That's good enough for us. We can just get through the summer here. We'll win the next one. Let's just get through the Ashes. You know, you guys are going to win, you know, 3-1 or something, and it's going to be fine. But, like, I just feel like Australia is so vulnerable, but it feels like Australia now are just ahead of the series.
We're all just wondering what the hell happened on day four with Wokes and Broad not bowling. We were there.
That's right.
Why didn't they bowl? Why did Denley and Moen bowl? I know it was a turning pitch and stuff, but why didn't you bowl the bowlers that get Australian batsmen out?
Right.
Okay, let me pose you a question here, guys, because this is the second Test preview. We're not talking about Edgbaston anymore.
No.
It's a point of history. Very historic, actually. It was great to be there. But, okay, let me pose you this frightening hypothetical.
Sure.
What if...
Chernobyl.
and what a great series that is.
sorry.
It is. Yeah, sorry. There's a metaphor in that. What if Steve Smith gets out for a low score? What then for Australia?
Like, you mean like run out of the bowl's end or something? Man cat. That's the way they should be targeting him.
We've been trying to discuss this, haven't we?
Yeah, what happens?
So can Australia... Do Australia have any sniff of anything in its cricketing future over the next decade if Steve Smith gets out for a low score?
No.
Mm.
No, I mean, like, Travis Head batted well.
Yes.
You know, Wade did get 100, which is unfortunately for him going to be forgotten in the annals of history because, you know, Smith did what he did. Australia's batting is... I mean, Pez, you've spoken about this very eloquently for the past month. Like, England conditions for Australian batsmen is kryptonite.
Yeah.
It's the very antithesis of how we've grown up.
It's Chernobyl.
It's meltdown stuff. Mm. You know, 19K radiuses or whatever.
Yeah. Put a wall up. Sorry.
This is now
no one in or out.
No one in or out. Russian politics, etc. Propaganda. Mm. Mate, if Steve Smith gets it, if they get Steve Smith out, they get us out.
Yeah.
Us, because we're in the team now. And I think, like, there's going to be, when Steve Smith comes to the wicket, the crowd's going to be up. You know, it's a Lord's crowd, so it's not going to be raucous. Let's be right about that.
Yeah.
But
it's Galatasaray.
Exactly. Yeah. But, like, you know, he's going to get his first ball in his hip and he's going to flick it to square leg and the whole country's going to go, oh, fuck. You know, this for 4 hours. Because it's a slow... It's like... It's a drip dry. It's drip bleeding to death, isn't it? Like, he's not... It's not Dave Warner or Sehwag or Kohli, you know, coming out flourishing drives. And it's just flicks off the hip, crabbing across his stumps, just getting 150 through the leg side off his hip, you know. It's not great to watch, you know, for your purists out there. But it's effective and they can't get him out. So that's what I see happening in Lords, mate.
Yeah, but then there is the Archer factor. So England have selected Jofra Archer and Jack Leach. You described two bowling changes out of four as like wholesale kind of change. Leach being selected as the Xavier Doherty left arm orthodox to Kevin Peterson's selection.
Yes.
Actually quite harsh on Jack Leach, I apologise. And obviously Jofra is a major X factor, somebody that many had in the first test, you know, barring him just getting over the World Cup.
Yeah.
He could be anything. You know, but there's now a war of words. The media have confected a war of words between Langer and Archer.
That's right.
Langer said, I'd just like to see him bowl in his third or fourth spell, just putting a little bit of pressure on him.
Mm-hmm.
And Archer's come back and said, well, Justin's got another thing coming. And he probably said something else in 2014 on Twitter, which will therefore be retrofitted for comedy, because that's what passes now.
Exactly. Mm. Someone said
because that. We don't ever repeat stuff from years ago.
No, definitely. Yeah. We've done 2,500 unique jokes. Yeah,
it's all original.
Just do the champ stuff. Just do the champ stuff.
Just be quiet. Do the dad stuff and the champ stuff.
Yeah, mate. It's interesting with Archer because it's like there seems to be this thing where it's like it's either binary. He's either going to take 10 in the first innings or he's going to be trash.
Mm.
There's obviously enough of a sample size where he's clearly a very, very good bowler. Now the question is, so he's going to do well, right? He's going to take a few wickets. Now the question is whether he like blows Australia away. I think he's more likely to blow Australia away than take none for in the Test match. Do you know what I mean? Because he's a great bowler. You know, he's tall. He hits the bat hard. He's going to be pumped up. There is a bit of a thing of like, are you good enough at this level? He's clearly good enough at the level. You know, Test cricket is obviously a different beast, and we spoke to Peter Siddle this morning about this, and Peter was saying that, you know, it is a different skill, red ball cricket to white ball cricket. But it's going to be really fascinating because he's not your typical... he seems to get a lot of wickets attacking the stumps as opposed to, Australians in nick off. So it's more slow, a bit slightly slower bowling. It's not as back of a length as what Archer bowls, I find. But it's going to be fascinating because, I mean, it's going to be a great challenge. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing him bowl and, you know, buying an Archer, you know, one jersey or whatever. What number is he going to wear, do you reckon?
Not sure.
10? Looks like a 10.
Yeah. What's the number of someone who daggers in Barbados?
Well, we know it's 69.
Yeah.
That's the answer. That's the answer.
And then conversely, on the Australian front,
yeah,
the cupboard is full of quicks.
It's
now.
Full. Cupboard's full, mate.
Cupboard's full, and we're full. You know, Australia's full. It's not. There's heaps of space in Australia. Yeah. We welcome refugees at any point. Sorry, I just got distracted with refugee talk.
Cupboard's full.
The cupboard's full of quicks, and no one. I don't think many people foresaw a scenario where a guy like Peter Siddle actually has a claim to maybe playing in all five tests. I mean, we've been talking about rotations, etc., and whatever, but there's a certain balance that he brought to the side with the bowling where he could dry up an end, the best nunfer Langer's ever seen, an expertise in the English conditions and a sort of humility that brings of this, you know, with the Australian side foregoing, you know, the need for speed, everything going through the chest and something that's actually more effective in English conditions.
Yep.
It worked at Edgbaston beautifully.
Yep.
While he didn't take a whole load of poles, it allowed Nathan Lyon to come on the other end, Pattinson, Cummins.
Yep.
But Langer's being coy about who's going to play, and there's this kind of enduring suggestion that no one's going to play five tests. They're all going to get a go at some point. So maybe they'll just stick with horses for courses. They'll just look at the wicket, which always looks green 3 days out.
Yeah.
If it's slow and flat, that will probably count against Peter Siddle, you would say. Probably lack the penetration in the sort of first or second innings.
Yeah.
But if there's a little bit about it, maybe they'll play him.
I think actually Siddle's more likely to play five tests than Pattinson, for instance, who I think is your strike bowler.
Sure.
So I think like it's really fascinating because Australia, the last 15 years, the way they've played, every bowler needs to have the potential to take 8 wickets in the test match, right? And actually, you know, in basically every level of cricket, if you've got a guy who's drawing runs up from one end, the wickets are going to come from the other
end.
It's like a really basic principle from like any level of cricket. And so Siddle, I don't think, is in the team to take 8 wickets test. He's in the team to go at like 2.5 and over and just dry up one end basically. Because England's batters want to hit boundaries, don't they? You think of the, especially in the middle order, Stokes, Butler, Bairstow, even Molinelli who won't be playing, but like and Joe Root as well. Boundary hitters, Jason Roy as well. So if you stop their boundaries, all of a sudden they look for it off more attacking bowlers, and that's why I think like Siddle is a very key. He's also bowled extremely well here, and he's picked because he bowls well here, right? So, to me, it seems more likely that your strike bowler is going to get rotated. That's where Stark might come into it. I think it was a couple of times in the Edgbaston Test match where, like, it was the end of day four and Siddle bowled the first over when there was, like, 3 overs left, and people would be like, oh, this is where you want Stark to bowl, right? But over the course of the Test match, Siddle's much more effective in longer spells than what Stark would be, because I think you might have said, either privately or publicly, Pez, that, like, Stark is very one gear, you know, and he will leak runs. He'll go at 5 and 6 and over. He might get your 8 wickets for the test match, but he will leak runs. So, I mean, what's better for the team? It seems to me Siddle is more likely.
Well, and their mantra this series seems to be far more based around discipline, the kind of hawkish Lehman era of like pushing the game forward and turning it yourself. I wonder whether the setup is actually like they're so balanced that maybe Hazelwood is the replacement for Siddle and Stark is a replacement for Pattinson.
Yeah.
And so that's maybe how they're thinking about it. So if Siddle retains his place and you're not going to see Hazelwood, you probably won't see both of them in the same side.
Possibly,
and same goes Pattinson, Stark. But yeah, I mean, you know, cliche, but great problems to have for Australia. And look, it's just so funny though, because we're so surprised that Australia finds itself in such a strong position. And it can change, you know, so quickly.
Sure.
It has changed before. I mean, Australia squared up the series four years ago at That's Lords, right. when it was one all after Lords, and Smith has got a double ton, and look what happened after that. It just unraveled really quickly. So we're going to hear more about that from Peter Siddle. But yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. There's meant to be some rain around. It's a beautiful day here at the moment. It's meant to be raining for the next week or so. So, you know, that probably plays into Australia's hands as well, given that, you know, it's maybe looking too far ahead. But if it is a draw or a rain-affected draw, you know, they both share the 12 points of the ICC championship, which is the main thing. But
great stuff for Australia.
Australia only needs to retain. Yeah. So,
well, that's it, mate. Australia might only need to get one more win in this series, and they will hold the Ashes. You know, I think that might be realistic to say. Wouldn't Australia love a 1-0 result? Wouldn't they just take four washouts from here, and there'd be a parade through the streets going down George Street in Sydney?
What would you prefer, 1-0 or 0-0? I know we can't do 0-0 now, but I mean, if we think this is the same as Stokes's boundary off his bat. Yeah. You know, like, is it more fun to win when you've really fucking annoyed the opposition or done something just extremely jammy? Or do you prefer to just, you know, bump and pump, as we've said before? Do you want to annihilate through bumping and pumping, or do you want to get the jammy win? Is it better to win annoying the opposition?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think England would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Definitely.
Yeah. So 1-0. We're looking at 1-0 here.
1-0.
A couple of rain-affected draws.
Yeah.
A couple of...
Smith bats for
Smith rear guards. Yeah, or bats for 5 days.
Bats for 5 days.
Bat him out.
Yeah. Gets to the oval. Yeah. Just need a draw. Yeah. Well, bat, thanks.
Bat him out of it.
Steve's on 780 of a million balls.
That'd be good.
And then we declare with like a session to go on day five. Give him a bell. Yeah, mate, I'll take 1-0. Mate, that's been our... A little preview for the Ashes test. Have we solved anything there? I mean, this test is the series, right? This is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not.
Well, if Australia win, 2-0.
Yeah. There's three to go, though. It's test cricket, though. Test cricket. Like test cricket in the modern era, everything can just turn on a dime so quickly. Mm. So I still have Stuart Broad's melting face in my head from Trent Bridge. He did a number on us there.
Yeah, okay. Well, we were very fortunate to be invited to the Australian Team Hotel this morning. We've pre-recorded this. So we spoke to Peter Siddle at 7:30 in the morning after finishing our live show at about midnight last night. So I was very hungover, as you were much better behaved. We spoke to the most sober man in England, Peter Siddle, and here he is now.
2.5 minutes and I'm out, so make it quick, boys.
A little insight there from talking to international cricketer. No, we'll kick off. Okay, so it's another normal circumstance for the grade cricketer enterprise. It's 7:45 a.m. just about on Lord's Test Eve, and here we are, Higos and I, at the Australian Team Hotel. Can't reveal the location, and we won't reveal the location. Mm-hmm. But we're sat here. Yeah, we might because we're unprofessional.
Yes,
but we're sat here with Australian pace maestro, the heartbeat of that pace attack at Edgbaston that destroyed England and helped us feel safe again as a nation.
Yes.
Peter Siddle. Peter, welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast.
Cheers, boys. I'm excited to be on and this beautiful morning in London.
Yeah, well, we met you just earlier and you look just fresh-faced and
fresh.
Fit and smiling. Less so for us,
yeah.
I would say. So just a neat little contrast there of, you know, how a healthy life looks.
I'm minutes away from dying, honestly. Minutes.
But we won't go into, you know, the heady world of international cricket and the circuit that we're now on.
Yeah. Or podcasting, yeah.
It does sound like a good circuit, though.
Yeah, for a couple of days.
Circuit. Yeah, yeah.
It's a real good circuit. Yeah, rock and roll. Let's start at the beginning, Pete. You know, you're a stalwart of the Dandenong Cricket Club. Some great connections there. Obviously, Jimmy Patterson's there as well. Can you just tell us about your earliest memories of Dandenong Cricket Club? I mean, like all of these guys we talked to, I'm sure you were a prodigy. So you would have been there with men. At a very early age, with some traumatic experiences, no doubt, like all of us.
There's always some of those, but I was just a little young hack, really. I just wasn't super talented, but I moved to Dandenong when I was about, I think I was 15 when I started playing senior cricket at Dandenong. I'm originally from Gippsland, which is 2 hours east of Melbourne. Dandenong, closest team. Closest place for the parents to travel, so they chose that one for me. But I've been there ever since. So had a lot of good memories and a lot of not so good memories that you speak of. I think if you want something funny, I think obviously showering's always a big issue for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
This has to be the brief from CA of the key message. Just talk to them about showers, yeah, they'll be fine.
I love the shower stuff.
Yeah. I thought you might like this, but as a young 16-year-old kid, you don't really want to get in the shower. You're a bit nervous around the senior guys, and I did that for the first three games, and then they're quick to say, "Okay, Sids, you got an ultimatum. You either get nude and get in the shower, or we're throwing all your crib gear in."
Right.
And I thought, Mum and Dad have paid a lot of money for this crib gear. Yeah. I've got no money to pay for any. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, no worries.
Right. Yeah.
Dropped the strides and in I went. And I was sweet from there. I felt relaxed in the changing room.
Oh, that's good. and you felt relaxed ever since? Tubbing, obviously. Like, we hear the tubbing culture in the Australian side's pretty good. Cam Bancroft said everyone just gets into their work.
Yeah.
I suppose you play cricket for Australia, so you've negotiated tubbing politics, I presume.
You don't play for Australia without it. Without negotiating tubbing politics.
Mm. That's right. You've gone through it all from those junior days to then obviously moving into state cricket. I was confident by the time I got the state cricket, so I was all right. Yeah. First one to get the gear off and straight in. I'm like, come on, boys, let's go.
telling 16-year-old youngsters, you've got to do it, otherwise the kid's in.
I was making sure I wasn't the man doing that, but it's okay when you're the 16-year-old.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, there's a strong crew in the shower, Good crew.
In your early on, were you always rapid? Like, I mean, when you first came into the Shield, you were behind like sort of 150s and stuff. Like, but you could always bat as well. But were you always quick as a junior?
Yeah, I was as a young bloke. I think I didn't really know what I was doing. I think all I knew was to run in and bowl fast. So as a young kid, that's all I did. And it works for a while until it doesn't take long for the senior guys at state level though to work out that this bloke's only really running in and bowling fast. They're not really moving around or anything, so it's a little bit easier to bat against. But I think as a young bloke, when you're fresh and haven't played a lot of cricket, it is pretty easy just to charge in. You're excited. Mm. You just want to try and get to that next level. Mm. And so you just go out there and have a red hot crack. And some days it comes out a bit faster than others, but I was definitely a hell of a lot quicker when I was younger.
Yeah, and how long did you have to wait for your first grade debut, sort of 16, 17? It's just normal stuff, you know, really it's earn your stripes.
Yeah, I wasn't too bad. I played I played about seven games. I played a couple in the threes, a couple in the twos.
Right.
Okay.
And then I went away and played in the state under, or the national under 17 carnival stuff in Victoria. Yeah. Did okay, came back and they gave me a chance and ended up finishing the season in the one. So I didn't have to wait too long, which was good.
Batting three as well, batting three, opening the bowling.
Nah, I could not hold the bat.
Really?
In senior cricket. Junior, I was an all-rounder. But once I got in the seniors, I couldn't hold it. I reckon I made about three or four ducks in my first five or six hits.
Right.
So I think my grade cricket average is probably less. It's not even double figures, I don't think.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I think we'll just get it up now, am I?
You must be looking forward to getting back to
great. It's 9.27, I think. Yeah. so it wasn't great. I was definitely batting at 11 when I first started playing.
Well, you've obviously had to work on your batting because obviously you hit 44 with Steve in the first test match here. You batted brilliantly. So you've obviously worked on your batting for a number of years now.
Yeah, enjoyed a hell of a lot more than bowling. Bowling's horrible. So I love my batting. I think it is. Once I got more accustomed to playing senior cricket, and then obviously the same thing happened when I went into first class cricket. You start out poor, you struggle.
Yeah.
And then you learn to adapt pretty quickly. But it probably took a while, but I guess the last couple of years, as you get older, you're probably a little bit more patient. You're happy to spend a bit of time out in the middle and face a few balls. And, it probably helped this year. I was over in England previous to this Ashes series and got a good opportunity to have a good bat and make a few runs. And, the first test was obviously a bit of a success in the end, which was nice.
Oh, wonderful success. We want to talk about Lords in a second, but before we do, just focusing on your career and those kind of formative experiences, can you take us back to the 07-08 Shield final where you kind of broke through, destroying New South Wales in that final, which a little grin comes over your face as I say that to you now, to New South Welshmen here. What are your memories of that? How important was that in shaping, your sense that, you could go all the way?
Yeah, I think it's what I said about, like, you get up into that next level and you just want to have a crack. And I think, we're coming up against that side that they were star-studded. They had everyone in there. Michael Clarke, Haddon, Kadich, Phil Jakes, young Phil Hughes. And then their bowling attack was Brett Lee, Stuart Clarke, Nathan Bracken, Stuart McGill, and Bo Casson, the young lefty who could bat a bit as well. So it was an unbelievable lineup. And I think, it was just about having a crack and yeah, got five from the first innings, four in the second. Yeah, they declared on me seven down, so I was a little bit disappointed. I couldn't have a crack at getting those, getting one of those last three for 10. But like, we ended up losing that match. But yeah, just having that opportunity to play against a lineup like that, which was pretty much, you know, a half or two thirds of an Australian lineup, I think, yeah, it made me feel like I belong, and I felt a lot more comfortable in the first class arena. And it was, yeah, obviously not a great finish for the year for Victoria, but personally, yeah, I felt a lot more comfortable after that.
I'm just conscious of your time here as well, because there's so much of your career that we could get into. But you know, we are sat only a couple of kilometres from Lords, and I think everyone at home is just, you know, can't wait for this Lords test to start and for Australia to sink their teeth into this series a little bit more. I mean, I feel like your story of sort of transformation and who you are now kind of mirrors where Australian cricket is now a little bit as well. I mean, you've seen so many different iterations of the Australian side. What's the side you're in at the moment? You know, what's the feel around the group? How does it compare to sides you've been in the past?
Yeah, it's a strong group. I think in the past we probably, like, and it's and no one in particular's fault, but I don't think we've probably been as prepared for a series, or, you know, the group as a whole prepared for an Ashes series in the UK. But where you get a feeling around this group, there's enough guys that have had experience playing in England, whether it's county cricket, the Aussie A team were here for a long time before the series, even just that little intra-club match that we played. Like, people like sort of look at it like, oh, it's a, you know, a bit of a wank, and why are you doing something like that? But 25 of the best cricketers suited for English conditions playing in a game against each other. That's better than any like first class game you could play in the country. So I think just the preparation we've had, and the willingness around the whole group, you know, like you had Mitchell Starc and Joshy Hazlewood missing out in that first test. There's 211 wickets for Starkey, 180 I think for Joshy, at unbelievable records. To have them around the group, you know, missing out, but, you know, still strong, because they know it's going to be a big series. Everyone's going to play a part. So it's just about biding your time and making sure you're ready to go when called upon. And who knows, there could be a few more opportunities this test coming.
I was going to say, like, in terms of preparation, you were playing for Essex last year. There's a photo of you bowling in a beanie. Is that the reason why Australia's going to win the Ashes, is what you're saying?
Oh, mate, I hope it doesn't get that temperature again. That was horrible. I think, last year we walked out. It was 11:30 a.m. because we started the morning because of bad light. At 11:30 a.m. we couldn't start on time because of bad light, but we walked out there and it was, check the temperature, 1 degree. Feels like -2. And I'm like, oh, yeah, perfect weather.
Yeah.
So I got out there and I'm like, I'm not taking this beanie off. So I ended up bowling a six-over spell with a beanie on. Two jumpers and two shirts. I did bowl all right, actually. Broke one bat and got one caught behind. So it wasn't a bad result, but it was freezing.
Mate, just on the transformation stuff, I mean, we always feel like Australia, like, for whatever reason, needs an ankle, you know, like, and you've been part of all of these sides, like, you know, under Punter, it was like, let's not look at the opposition in the eyes, you know, with, you know, Clark was get ready for broken fucking arm, and now it's, you know, electrons through the body and earthing and stuff, and you know, yoga courses and holistic medicine, etc.
Yeah, I'm straight to meditation after this.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, you're a man of adaptation because you've been correct through all of it. You know, yeah. Which do you prefer the most? You like the alpha chest stuff, or are you more into the kind of new age? You know,
I think I'm a bit of a chameleon. I sort of adapt to each. each
whatever you want, JL.
Whatever you want. Oh yeah, JL. Yeah, meditation, yeah. Yoga. Go off a morning walk with him as well. We'll get our chai latte and we'll be good to go. But I reckon I've just been able to blend in all through the eras. I was Punter's little go-to man when I was young, bowling fast and trying to hit him in the head, bowling bounces. And now I'm running the meditation classes, but making the smoothies. And I think it has changed a lot. I had a lot of different coaches, a lot of different captains, a lot of different players. But it's enjoyable, I think. You know, I think that's just the game, isn't it? I think everyone, you just change with the modern day, and that's how it is now. And I think, you know, that's working for the guys that are into it. So if it's working, we'll stick to it.
Nice. Just tell us about Lords. Obviously, people will be listening to this just on the eve of the Test match. You know, I know you can't give away the side or anything like that. There's a lot of speculation, you know, because we've never had a bigger stocked cupboard of quicks. Yeah. So you obviously won't give anything away.
But, oh, mate, I wish I knew the side as well. Don't worry.
I mean, how's the team feeling? You know, we've been talking to a couple of guys off air who've been in and around the England setup saying, you know, I think we're, you know, we could be really struggling here. I mean, should guys at home, should people at home start to believe, you know, that, you know, this could be something special?
Yeah, I think they should. I think the thing with any Ashes series, though, I think both countries have the belief for at least the first half of the series that their country's going to win. I think, and that's how it's always been, whether you've been the favourite or the underdog. But I think, you know, to get that first test out of the way and the win, it does leave you in a good position going forward. Obviously, Lords is a ground we've had a lot of success on. So it is a place coming into 1-0, you're coming into Lords. Even though there is a little bit of rain around, which could hold to that, but it is a place that we like playing. We have success here, so you know, to go 2-0 up in a series would be amazing. The boys are up and about. I think the excitement from a lot of boys who haven't played at Lords, you know, they're buzzing. So I think we're in a good place. But like we said, it is only one game. I know it's a cliche, but you got to win three to win the series. So that's what we got to concentrate on. Concentrate on this one, get the second one, and go from there. But yeah, we're here to win the series, and the boys are definitely up and about to accomplish that.
Should probably also just ask about Jofra Archer as well. You know, who we love. He obviously won the World Cup.
I think everyone in Australia loves him.
Yeah, that's right. He was he went on a circuit in Barbados, daggering people in his English kit.
Yep.
Can't get much better than that. No,
he wins.
Just look up the term daggering, by the way. It's not a euphemism. It's a dance. It's a thrust. He's entered into a war of words with JL, who just said, we want to see him in Test cricket. And he said, well, you got another thing coming, JL. You got any response to Jofra?
Well, not much. I've got to face him. So. Potentially. So, how you going, mate? Congratulations on the Test debut. Like, everything you've done for Australia in the Big Bash has been great. Can you please look after me?
I can see that'll make headlines everywhere.
Yeah.
But response.
Out of everything, I know he's had a little pot shot back at JL, but I don't know if he knows. JL's a crazy little man that's got a black belt in karate and can fight. So I'm not so sure he's the one he wants to be having pot shots at. But I think it's going to be good fun. I think, you know, everyone in Australia has witnessed Jofra in the Big Bash, how exciting he is to watch and to play against. So, it's going to be a bit of fun. But I think the thing in our favour, which Lang did obviously bring up, is that, he hasn't played a lot of red ball cricket. And red ball is a different beast to running in and bowling 4 overs and 10 overs. So that's probably going to be the big test for him. And as confident he is, no doubt in the back of his mind, he probably is thinking a little bit, you know, 30, 40, 50 overs in a match. You can't just go out and think you can do that. You got to be able to have that practiced and done over the years. So it is going to be a test for him. But on the other hand, it's a great challenge for us. And I think, the boys are excited about facing him and the battle that it's going to bring and the challenge that's going to come. So, looking forward to it. And, we've all been practicing our bounces in the nets.
Peter Siddle, thank you for joining the Grade Cricketer podcast and enduring whatever this was in the Australian Team Hotel, whose location we can't reveal.
Thank you, boys. It's been great fun, and look forward to getting on again another time.
Cheers. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time again. It's time for, two blokes today off the internet to talk about swimwear. Yeah, in the UK in Hyde Park.
And we came down to a ponds, Bez, because it's 8 in the morning and we're wearing budgie smugglers doing a podcast. We're not getting any strange looks. Oop. You know when you're on the tube and you can do anything, no one looks at you. It's the same in Hyde Park, apparently.
Yes. And if you'd like to join us, not just here, but just generally wearing budgie smugglers in inappropriate places.
That's right.
Or inappropriate places where you do have some on sale, some custom smugglers on sale. Right, they're limited edition. I'm not sure there are many left. There's been a frightening surge on them, particularly in Australia. Yep. But we're releasing our all-time alpha range. You're going to see Alex Carey's face bandaged up. You're going to see Viv Richards. You're going to see Ian Botham appearing on 1986 Scottish Q&A show, talking to teenagers about childcare and fox hunting.
There's two of my favourite images on the budgies. Pat Cummins' eyes,
of course,
which just peek over the back, and just a photo of Chris Tremlett. That is just—I mean, it's not even a funny photo. It's just a photo of Chris Tremlett. It's just what it implies, and what it implies is that you're alpha, and he's an all-time alpha.
That's right. So we got them on sale. You can go to budgiesmuggler.com.au. You can get your own custom smugglers as well. You literally go on. It's extremely easy. Just upload a couple of pictures and they do the rest for you.
Yep.
So you can do that. That's a really easy process. And there's a whole bunch of other swimwear you can buy. They're available in the UK as well. I think that's budgiesmuggler.co.uk. And you can find them all over social media, etc. Literally, it's just, you know, do you need all the details? Just Google those words, Budgie Smuggler.
Yep. If you can find a podcast, you can find Budgie Smuggler, which is the tagline.
Yeah. Cheers.
Hashtag Ask TGC Pez this morning. Fantastic way to Peter Siddle. One thing I've noticed is that, like, mate, the more professional athletes we meet, they're just all fucking enormous.
Massive.
Like, Peter Siddle, I thought was going to be little. Not necessarily little, but just smaller. Like I'm 6'1", you know, like to keep fit. Yeah, Siddle's bigger than me and thicker. Thick. Yeah. Skin looking amazing.
He's an absolute picture of health.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I say that as someone who is a fucking absolute vessel of illness and alcohol at the moment. Great tour, let me tell you.
Really good tour.
These podcast tours, they come around too often.
Yeah.
When they do, you got to cash in. I've always said that.
Yeah, you have always said that. I can confirm that. For those wondering as well why it's just Higos and I and not Dave. Dave is in London, as you guys know. We're doing a live show, but just one of the kind of tropes of the industry.
Yeah.
Industry. God, we've sold out. We got a very late call up just before we went on stage last night in London from Cricket Australia Media to let us know that we did have this interview with Peter, but it was going to be at 7:30 in the morning. And just given where Dave's staying, it was going to make it quite a difficult round trip for him to make it in from where he was staying and then home again before our live show. It's a whole logistical thing. So for those wondering, that's where Dave is.
All right. Nick writes in, growing up, my dad worked hard messing... growing up, my dad worked hard, messing that he rarely, if ever attended, I think he means meaning that he rarely, if ever, attended my cricket matches. I accepted this at the time, and it has extended into my adult career of mediocre club cricket. However, this year my dad finally came to see me play, literally 15 years since he last saw me play. Sadly, it was an MCC game against a Foundation hub. There's a lot of typos going on here.
Yeah.
Which is not easy at this hour in the morning when I'm hungover. What this means is that I was playing against 13-year-olds, yes, 13, with rolling subs, children, with a top age of 14. I walked out to bat and got 40-odd not out, 32 off 25 balls, and was left with only the fundamental meaningless of my own achievement. My dad congratulated me, but I'm now worried that this is all that he thinks I've achieved in what I will loosely call my cricket career. More depressingly, it has made me question whether it is all I have achieved at the ripe age of 33. Have I got beyond needing my dad's approval?
Thanks for the question. That's possibly the loosest reading we've had of a question and full of typos as well. Look, I guess my question is... Well, firstly, yes, obviously you want your dad's approval. What's
Nick.
The kind sir's name?
Nick.
And secondly, you wondered whether that score was all your cricket career had kind of amounted to. And I just want to post you, Nick, is it? Maybe that was one of your best scores. And if your dad was there while that happened, be bloody grateful for that.
Mm.
And if your dad came up to you after a match, I can tell you, Nick, there are thousands and thousands of men of varying levels of social and psychological functionality listening to this podcast, thinking, if only my dad had congratulated me, especially after making 30-odd not out, which, to be frank, is probably in the top 20 of most people's highest scores.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is a bit of one of those damned with faint praise kind of things where Nick's actually trying to show us that he's a good cricketer.
Mm-hmm.
But basically you've written in, you've said, I've played for the MCC. Mm-hmm. Sure, it's against 13-year-olds.
Yep.
I've hit 30-odd not out. I'm calling it 40-odd. My dad was here and he congratulated me. Sorry, what's the problem?
Doesn't get any better. Pez, we're in Hyde Park. There's like families walking around, you know, children.
You can hear the swans.
Proud parents.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking like this never happens at club cricket, you know, and rightfully so. Okay, Elliot Baker Sorry, Nick. Yeah, have a great day.
Yeah. And life.
Have a good life.
Have a good life.
Yeah, don't write in again with answering those questions that we just posed to you. Elliot Baker writes this. Says, hi, boys. I've recently moved from Queensland to the London.
Hmm.
I told people it was purely to see more of Europe, but in reality, it was just to experience a summer of a lifetime with a World Cup followed by the Ashes. Attached is a screenshot of a Steve Smith Instagram post reflecting his two 140-plus scores. Since moving, I've only had the odd one-sentence message from the old man. So I was truly amazed to view that my father, a man incapable of correctly using social media, has commented a full three sentences on a said Steve Smith photo. His comment reads, "Very happy for you, mate. Keep it going and never forget where you've been. Your dad, sorry, you dad and nation are very proud of you." You spelt with the letter, not the word. "Lads, I don't know what's worse, my father's spelling and grammar, or the fact that he actually thinks Steve will give this a read. Not to mention the fact that I've been playing park cricket for a local club in West London since I've arrived, and despite averaging 17.12, sorry, I got distracted, I haven't received any such encouragement from father. Do I need to score back-to-back hundreds to receive such a message? And does every bloke over 50 wish their son was a Steve Smith?"
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So the dad has actually commented under Steve Smith. Is the dad writing to Steve Smith?
Correct.
On his
Instagram
photo. Yeah,
that's
right. Yeah. So your dad doesn't talk to his own
he's
son.
Very happy for you, mate.
Well, you know, who would you... Well, I mean, that's probably... Yeah, just goes to show. I mean, you know, what dad hasn't commented under Steve Smith, to be honest,
good
in
point.
The last couple of weeks?
Have you?
Yeah,
you
absolutely. I've got a 15-month-old son.
Yeah. Send the DMs?
Yeah, and I've written to Steve Smith saying he's very proud as a father of you. You're only 3 years younger than me, but I'm a dad now.
Your nation's proud of you.
Your nation's proud of you. Don't remember, you know, don't forget where
mate,
you came from.
Is this the beginning of the end for Instagram? Because like, you know why Facebook's dying? It's because everyone's parents got on it and they start posting weird stuff.
Is that right?
And they don't realise that, like, the world can see what you're writing.
Yeah.
You know, like everyone's got a weird uncle who posts weird shit on the internet or like very strong political views.
Yes.
Like they do. That's why Facebook's not working anymore. Uh-huh. Instagram's still the younger generation. That's why it's thriving.
Right.
So this could be the beginning of the end. You know, just dad's posting this like, "The nation's proud of you, Steve," on Instagram. It's the beginning of the end, man. I'm telling you.
Thanks for the question.
Yeah.
Elliot.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Sorry, I just got to open my phone back up. Normal stuff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bumble.
Good. Yeah, just swiping now. Jesse, g'day guys, big fan. I've got a bit of a suggestion or probably just a really far-fetched request for you blokes. Growing up, my brother and dad were big fans of Roy and HG's commentary for the Origin games and the odd ODI.
Yep.
I reckon you blokes would absolutely kill it doing some commentary for the cricket. Not only would you offer some incredibly fresh and honest insight, but it would have all of us in fucking stitches. More than likely, this will roll over your heads, but I have brought this up to heaps of my mates who are big fans and all agree it would be about time if you did. Would mean a lot if you addressed it and maybe got some feedback and asked your audience if they think it would be a good idea. Either way, best of luck over there in the UK and keep doing what you're doing. Cheers, boys. Jesse. We're going to do some commentary?
Yeah. Well, I wrote that question.
Yeah, it's one of your burner accounts.
It's my burner account.
Yeah. Which is
well,
one of the great cricketers.
Well, separate a few things. Firstly,
okay.
Roy and Ace share the absolute kings.
Yeah.
They are not to be trifled with. They are gods and any comparison is... embarrassing, frankly. They are absolute legends, so let's not insert ourselves
heroes
in that conversation.
No, let's.
Yeah. No, no. Yeah.
You wrote the question, mate.
No, that was Jesse, my alter ego.
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus, there's a swan!
Jesus Christ.
They fucking stampeded us. Swans don't stampede.
Yeah. Not to be confused with the London Swans, who are people who play AFL who moved from Australia to London.
Well, that was a great commentary opportunity and we just yelled.
And we fucked it.
a flock of swans, I would say about 35 in unison, started flying, swooping towards us, just past a bench and into the water,
we panicked
and yelled in this great commentary moment.
We're done with Warren
HG. Yep. So for all those producers out there listening, that's there are our chops. I mean, let's answer it. That's something we'd love to do. I think we always try and take on a new project every summer. I think we could do something like that. I think people wouldn't mind a disrespectful grade cricket overlay to the cricket that they watch. I think while a lot of the commentary out there is good, there's a lot of mate protecting that goes on. There's a lot of vanilla descriptions of the cricket going on. Yeah. And I do think...
And that could be us.
And
we
that
could be
us
our mates.
Doing that. We could become mates with our superstars and
absolutely
then just protect them on air.
Yeah.
And pretend that we've never met the fans.
100%. Anonymous writes in, hashtag RCGC, I was in the toilet of your live show in London today. I happened to be standing next to my brother at the urinal, and the thought passed through my mind that I should chub up to alpha him.
Oh my God.
Despite us being genetically the same, he maintains I'm adopted. Will the therapist ever work out my inferiority complex? even though I have a better batting average, a higher paid job, and a higher alcohol tolerance. Thoughts?
It's anonymous, right?
He wrote in later saying probably best to keep that one anonymous. But I have his details.
I mean, even just the technical like capacity to chub up at the urinal with the pace it takes to just to urinate.
Yeah.
To like chub up in that I don't know about you. I couldn't achieve that. I mean, when we talk about chubbing up in the dressing rooms, if you missed the sort of, that was sort of the great years. Cricketer, like your old stuff better than your new stuff.
Yeah.
That was about being in the dressing rooms and doing that over a sort of like a longer period of time while the captain was maybe talking to you or you're having a beer with your mates before you have a shower so that you have a little bit more blood down there, you know, for what you present to the group.
Yeah.
But chubbing up while you're literally doing a piss.
Standing next to your brother.
Standing next to your brother.
Yeah. Who happened to be standing next to him.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah. And the thought crossed my mind, I should chub up here.
Yeah.
I'm thinking therapist, man. You can get them. They still do some kind of thing for that in Australia, don't they?
I would walk into a therapist's office and read that. And I would say, like, they would walk in, they'd say, what can I do for you? And he'd say, hashtag ask TGC. And then finish it with thoughts.
Yeah. And then we'd end up getting banned. Book bans.
All right. Well, it's been a gorgeous, what day is it today? Tuesday morning in London at Hyde Park. Many people have been walking past thinking that we are someone. Little do they know we're solving guys' issues with their penis size at live show.
It's a sociological exploration of the male condition. That's what the Grade Cricketer is. It isn't a satirical overlay of Grade Cricket circa 1999-2009 inclusive.
Yeah.
It's an exploration of the male condition.
Pez, we had Dan Christian for our guest last night. Mm. He brought his wife, Diana, along.
Mm.
Both lovely, lovely people.
Lovely people.
You got a message from Dan?
Got a message from Dan just before the show.
Yep.
Dan, we actually hadn't met Dan in person. We'd had him highly recommended as a funny guy.
Yeah.
And he said, look, I don't like my wife is coming with me. They're coming down from Nottingham down to like Leicester Square Theatre in the West End of London.
Yeah.
You know, do you think she should come along to the show? Yeah. She's not really that into cricket. And I was like, it's pretty niche, Christo. You know, like I was thinking about her genuinely and the fact that there's normally sort of 95% men there.
That's right.
And then he just texted me again from nowhere and said, we've just gone through your last 20 Twitter posts and Instagram posts and she's decided to give it a miss. But then we met. She came to the dressing room beforehand, and so we all had a beer. And Deanna decided to stay and enjoy it.
We won her over.
Decided to stay and enjoy it.
It was good last night. We had one show to go. Yeah. Is this going to be released before that?
It will. It'll come out. Yeah.
So we got Jason Gillespie tonight. That's going to be exciting. Then Lord starts. Then we go home. We do this. It's been the end of the tour.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for listening to this podcast. Thanks for coming to the live shows. Those who did, we'll be back again after the Lord's Test match when Australia goes 2-0 up, or 1-1, or 1-0.
Yeah, the three options.
So, yeah.